afternoon and welcome to Indie Business Radio for April 23rd, 2007. I'm your host, Donna Maria, the Chief Executive Indie, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, your business, your way. Today's show is sponsored by Essential Labs, the place for custom formulation of cosmetics products for your private label. Visit EssentialLabs.com today for more information about how they can help you take your beauty business idea from concept to reality. Also sponsored by the third annual Indie Business Conference coming up in Charlotte, North Carolina in August. Join us as we pursue life, liberty, and the pursuit of Indie at IndieBusinessConference.com where you'll find registration information. The American Association of University Women Educational Foundation released a study today saying that women make only 80% of the salaries of men just 1 year after college, and that after 10 years, the gap widens even further. Our guest today is aware of this sobering statistic. She is Janet Christie, president of Leverage and Development, LLC, a consulting firm that helps women and minority-owned businesses use their status to their advantage. Janet is also the author of Capitalizing on Being Woman-Owned. Do join us with your comments or questions, 800-773-0355. Janet, welcome to Indie Business Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Janet, what do you think of that newly released report?
Well, I wish it were a surprise, but it seems like they keep saying the same thing over and over. And I think that it is one of the reasons, because there's that glass ceiling and lower pay and those kinds of things that have made women start businesses on their own so that they can be in charge. At least if they're going to earn less, they'll be in charge of it.
No, that's a good way to say it. But, you know, Janet, I guess you're right. It's not so surprising. But were you at all surprised that it started so soon out of college?
Well, you would think that by now people would be making about the same when they started. And I was watching the news channels this morning. They were talking about the same report, and they were talking about the fact that, you know, women taking time out to have children and things like that might slow them down in their promotions and therefore in their pay increases. But then they quickly pointed out that that wasn't the only thing. They didn't account for the entire gap. But to get back to your question, yes, it is surprising to me that it starts immediately.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. And I guess that's part of what might have motivated you to write this book. Tell us a little bit about how Capitalizing on Being Woman-Owned came about. What's your motivation and inspiration for this?
Well, actually, it is part of the motivation, because one of the things that I feel like is that women don't understand that they have choices. And one of the choices is to be an entrepreneur and to be successful at it. I think so often we women don't give ourselves permission to be successful in true business measurement terms, which means making money. It's okay to start a business so you can be home with your children, and that is a good reason. I'm not saying that it's not, but that's one of the socially acceptable reasons. Or you want to start a business so that you can do something with your talent or your ability and something like that, and those are good reasons too, but we just don't measure our success in what the business world calls their terms of making money and promoting ourselves, and that's really where we don't do very well in promoting ourselves. So I specifically wanted women to understand they have choices and to help them, once they make that choice, be successful at it. And actually, I kind of evolved into doing this work with women and minority businesses. I worked in the telecommunications field for over 25 years. And then started doing some economic development work with government entities, primarily around technology, which is where I had worked for so long and was the only woman in the room 90% of the time. But when I started doing this economic development work, sort of evolved then into doing work with small businesses, and a couple of my friends had gotten certified as a woman-owned business about that same time, and they said, we really don't know how to make the most of it, and we have a huge stack of information, but we're not sure what to do with all this. Could you help us figure out how to at least sell to government, since you've done so much of it, and maybe to large business, because you've done that too? So I thought they were wrong. I assumed that there were lots of information out there and started looking for it, and I found out they were right. So as I did more and more detailed research, I ended up with a marketing plan for them, sort of a how-to book.
Mm.
And I realized that there were probably a lot of other women that were looking for the same thing, and started doing it with other women, and then was asked to do some workshops with chambers and technical colleges, and the next natural step was the book.
Wow. So, Janet, in your experience, do women really have any advantages over other groups who are competing for the same types of government contracts? I know that's a big question. There's lots of kinds of government contracts, but do we really have advantages that we're not taking advantage of?
Yes, there really are. And one of the main places that women are not taking advantage is in being a subcontractor to a larger business that is considered the prime contractor to government entities and agencies. And that's whether it's federal, state, or local. And to give you a little bit better understanding of that, the federal government has now declared or has a rule that any project that has a value of $500,000 or more, it's $1 million if it's a construction project, but $1 million builds what? Maybe a way station on a highway? So, as you can see, almost any project, when it has that value, they have to have what they call a subcontracting plan. So the prime contractor, before they can ever get the contract, has to present that plan that shows how they will use all the subclassifications of disadvantaged business, and women-owned is one of those, minority-owned is another. So they have to show how they will use them, and then they're audited to make sure they follow through with that.
Mm-hmm.
So if the problem now is they can't find them. So they will show in there that they advertise for, you know, where they will advertise, where they plan to use them, and then, like I said, they're audited to see if they actually did use them, and they can actually lose the contract if they don't do what they said they were going to do.
Janet, did you say they couldn't find them?
Yes.
Okay.
I now, because some people in, especially my home area, know that this is what I do, they will contact me sometimes and ask me to talk about it in my workshops or things like that, and I go to conferences all the time, and they talk about not being able to find the women-owned businesses.
Well, hopefully we can begin to fix that. I mean, what do you think the reason for that is? That's surprising to me.
I think one of the problems is that women, along with other minorities and other types of disadvantaged businesses, or what the government classes as disadvantaged, they make the assumption that once they get certified or get on that list somewhere that they are that type of business, that that's all they have to do, that the businesses will then come look for them.
Or if you build it, they will come.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or if you get listed in the phone book, they'll call you, basically.
Yeah. So well, let me ask this. Once you decide you kind of want to begin to compete, what is that process of certification like? You were talking about once you're approved that, you know, people think the business will just sort of come. What is that approval process like that generally, and is it different at the local, state, federal, and other kinds of levels, and what are the options here, and how do you get approved?
Well, there is no certification, federal certification, that you are a woman-owned business. There is for disadvantaged, but gender or race is not the only thing that will qualify you for that certification, and those are done by the SBA. And there's also an economic qualifier in that you have to have a personal worth of a certain amount or less. So that's one of the certifications that women-owned businesses can get, and that's probably the one that comes to mind most when prime contractors are looking for someone, or used to be, but now they actually look for women-owned businesses too. But on a state level, usually they'll include women-owned in with their minority classification. They may separate it, or usually they'll kind of classify it so that you'll be under the disadvantaged or under the minority, but they'll classify it that you're woman or minority, or maybe even break it down into subcategories of minority. So it may be minority woman or non-minority woman. So those that's part of the qualification, and you have to show that your business is 51% or more owned by a woman or women.
And where do you go? Is there a place at the SBA's website where you go to get added to this? Does it cost anything?
There is no charge if it's a government certification. There are some private certifications for women-owned businesses, and those do charge for you to go through their process, and it's usually in the neighborhood of $350 to $500. But for the state and federal certifications, there's not a charge, but you do have to provide a lot of financial information, usually 3 years of tax returns for both the business and the personal. So it's a lot of paperwork, and I guess if you're talking about cost, then it's going to be time, your time that it costs, and maybe, you know, some expense with an accountant or something like that. And I think that's another reason you asked earlier about, you know, why are people, you know, why can't these women-owned businesses be found? Sometimes they're not certified because they don't want to go through, you know, that's one of those things you keep putting on the back burner because you've got all these day-to-day issues. But they do want you to have the certification because it's also sort of a qualifier. That way they don't have to wonder if you're just a facade of being woman-owned but truly are woman-owned.
Right, right. I would imagine that most business owners, most women business owners who get past the first 3 to 5 years in business do have that kind of tax-related paperwork and backup for their, I guess, their validity. It's available. So hopefully we're opening up some eyes here to these kinds of possibilities. Most of my listeners are involved in the health and wellness and lifestyle industries, Janet. Have you come across any opportunities in general that are specific to those areas for some of these contractors who need to get woman-owned subcontractors involved?
Well, this is a time when the healthcare industry is growing in every way, both for employment but also for small businesses. So there are a lot of healthcare facilities and agencies that are subcontracting or outsourcing parts of their services. So home health is one of the areas. There's other types, so types of wellness and things like that. They are outsourcing those types of services, and they all the major healthcare facilities and organizations do have goals for the amount of money they'll spend with women-owned businesses. So, yes, there are opportunities for those things.
So it sounds like a lot of it is getting your foot in the door. I know, for example, I was at a government office not too long ago. I was in the elevator and reading the signs on the elevator door, and one of them said, "Join us to relieve office stress," or something like that. And there was an aromatherapist who was a massage therapist who was there that day, and she had a classroom type setting set up during a 3-hour lunch window. And in the back, she was actually giving seated massages and charging for it. And I thought she was also selling some of her products too. And I thought that was really interesting, and I tried to follow up to see, you know, how that opportunity came about, but you know, I just didn't have the time at the moment. But you know, that to me was indicative of, you know, one of many opportunities that sometimes just come about just, you know, by luck sometimes. I don't know how you find out about stuff like that. It's not like I went to the government office website and looked around and I didn't see any requests for help in that area.
And there might not be. However, sometimes having a relationship with a company or a government agency on a long-term basis, you know, just keeping your name in front of them, then when an opportunity occurs, they're going to know about you. And if they're struggling to meet their goal of how much money they spent with women-owned businesses, then you're going to rise to the top. You don't usually get business only because you're woman-owned. You've got to be qualified, but it's a great door opener, a tiebreaker, and then being in the right place at the right time because they needed somebody, and you would be a natural because they now have a little bit of knowledge of you.
Well, that brings up an interesting topic about something called networking. We're going to go to our first break with author Janet Christie, author of Capitalizing on Being Woman-Owned. We're going to take a break, but before we do, I want to send out congratulations to the 2007 Indie Business of the Year. Lila Barker and her team at Bella Luce, globally inspired skincare in Columbia, South Carolina. Visit Bella Luce, BellaLucce.com, and check out their new line of Peruvian chocolate bath products. All the deliciousness without the calories. This is Indie Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. We're here this afternoon with Janet Christie, author of Capitalizing on Being Woman-Owned. And before we took our first break, Janet was sharing with us that taking advantage of subcontractor opportunities in the municipal, state, government contracts arena is about getting your name out there and connecting and making relationships. And I know you have to be qualified and fill out paperwork, but Janet, in the scheme of things, is that networking really important as well?
Oh, absolutely. The paperwork is like the first step. It's sort of like getting your name in the phone book, but then you've got to let people know that you exist because they may or may not look at those lists.
Hmm. So that probably means, I guess, maybe most people could start with their local chamber of commerce?
That is a good place to start because if you can get in front of the larger businesses, because very rarely are other small businesses really that much in need of, you know, trying to, they don't normally set goals, so they're not really looking for women or minority-owned businesses. However, they may be looking for a partner or a subcontractor if they're doing business with government entities. So it is a very good place. But I usually recommend that they get in front of the people that they need to be doing business with. So if there is our sub-organizations within the chamber, for instance, if you're trying to do business with commercial real estate, a lot of chambers will have a real estate group or a manufacturer's group. So I would recommend trying to be at those activities or those meetings, but also finding out about the professional organizations that you're trying mm-hmm. to sell to. For instance, if it's mm-hmm. health or nurses or something like that, then mm-hmm. you know, try to go to their meetings.
Okay,
get
yeah.
in front of those yep. people.
A lot of my members sell beauty products, and one thing that I've always wondered is when is the company going to be founded that focuses on getting their products into those baskets that people get when they buy a new house?
Oh, yeah, and getting in front of real estate people would be
yeah, I mean, I've talked to several small business owners in this industry about that, and no one has done it, and I know it's probably not that easy, and the real estate market's not that great now, although where I'm based, they are, the real estate market never crashed. It's been wonderful here.
Yeah.
But, you know, we got our, you know, basket of spaghetti and, you know, flowers and candles and whatever, and I was like, ah, this would be perfect for some of these indie beauty business owners that I know. So there's a tip for you guys out there.
There's another opportunity for those people selling beauty products, and that's at schools. because a lot of the career centers or technology centers, we used to call them vocational high schools way back in the dark ages when I was in high school, mm-hmm. but they very often will have a cosmetology program, and those people have to buy beauty products too. So that's those people, those school districts have a goal for the amount of money they'll spend with women-owned businesses. So either mm-hmm. those or technical colleges, any place that they have, any kind of maybe massage therapy schools at technical colleges, mm-hmm. Any of those people, they have to use products the same as, you know, any hair salon.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. If you could get in with the county school district
mm-hmm.
or something like that, that would be really wonderful. So, Janet, let's take like a fictional company. Let's take that aromatherapy massage practitioner that I saw at the Washington, D.C. government office, and maybe just walk us through what she would do. Let's say, for example, if she did want to be considered for some of those subcontractor opportunities, what is the process like? I know you can't speak for every single process across the country, but just in general, what is the process like? How long does it take? And stuff like that.
You're asking the process for getting certified or for networking with or getting to be a subcontractor?
For getting to be a subcontractor, the certification process is probably, well, correct me if I'm wrong, is it a lot more defined?
It is definitely more defined. So, and it does depend on the entity that's doing the certifying, and so they usually have, and I talked about most of the general things, but then the specifics are very defined for each individual state or organization.
So let's talk about the subcontractor part, you know, where you can kind of get your foot in the door and maybe even win a small piece of a large contract. I have a friend who makes beauty products, and she's also an Internet web development professional. And she got her beauty products into the gift store for a federal museum and was there enough to connect with their Internet development department and got a $40,000 contract from them.
I think you just described the process.
Oh, I mean, you know, but that's just nothing that you plan, and it just kind of happened for her. To the extent you can sort of plan and, you know, put a little thought into it in advance, what is the general process like?
Well, one of the main things is to remember that people still buy from people. So they're not going to know about you or trust you or buy from you unless they have some type of relationship or at least knowledge of you. What I usually do in my workshops or even when I'm working with individual clients and very definitely point out in the book about capitalizing on being woman-owned is to clarify your business. And in that clarification process, you do three things. You decide who your clients are, what your product is or service, and even though you may know what it is, of course, that, you know, it's beauty products or aromatherapy or catering service or whatever, make sure that you understand it and can talk about it easily and describe it and apply it. And then that third thing is the geographic area that you're going to research. But when you're clarifying your business, then you're going to find out who your clients are or your prospects are. And that prospect may be a prime contractor, and that's anybody who has a contract with a business or government entity. And then you've got to first identify those before you can network or be around those people. And then once you've done that, you've got to find out where they are, because a big part of networking to be a subcontractor is being in the right place at the right time. So those professional agencies that I was talking about earlier, and places that they're going to be, and then developing those relationships. So once you find out who they are, you start to get your name in front of them. So you let them know that you exist, either by networking at a chamber event or sending them a letter. But be sure when you do that you know how your product applies to what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So if it were this aromatherapy company, maybe they could sell to the technical colleges and other government-supported schools that offer massage therapy,
mm-hmm.
and they would then need to understand how the process is for purchasing is for that particular entity, and most technical colleges or government-supported schools that would provide massage therapy training have to go by state procurement code. So that'd mean you'd have to understand a little bit about what they have to go through. Like, do they have to bid, or is it just a verbal bid, or do you have to actually submit a proposal?
Right.
So understand that process, but then try to get in front of that process by getting to those people and letting them know what you do. And not saying, hey, I'm a woman-owned business and I do this. The first thing you do is tell them what you do and how they could use it. And then you say, and by the way, I could help you meet your goal for the use of women-owned businesses.
Right.
And that's why you need that certification, so it's kind of subtly at the bottom of your brochure or on your letterhead or on your website. But then once you've let those people know you exist, you still got to stay in front of them, because the way it works, and especially state and local government, most of the time, is that they submit to the procurement office, and that's the people who send out the bids, or they're the rule keepers that keep everybody doing what they're supposed to when it comes to purchasing.
Right.
When they submit that request for a particular product or service to be purchased, they normally also submit the list of people that will get to bid on it, that information will be sent to. If you're not on the list, you don't necessarily know about the bid. To be on the list, they've got to know who you are and feel a little bit comfortable about you.
Now, Janet, is it fair to ask this question? Why does this seem so difficult?
Time.
Is that what it is? Because
I think that's the main thing. Because I've done marketing plans for this that lay it out step by step for an individual business,
mm-hmm.
and I think they want to take that marketing, the book, the marketing plans in and wave it over the telephone and then expect the telephone to ring.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, there are no magic wands in marketing. So
you mean you have clients who have paid for and obtained the certification and utilized your services to create the step-by-step outline of what to do, and they haven't done it?
They'll do a little bit of it, and then they'll put it on the shelf, because it does take time, and it takes staying in front of people.
But they
may spend money on an ad or a chamber membership, but if they were working the plan that we had developed, they probably would be getting better results with less effort as you go along. There's more effort in the beginning, because you have to register on websites, you have to send out information, you have to make follow-up calls.
Mm-hmm.
But in my opinion, it's pay me now or pay me a whole lot more later.
Mm-hmm.
So spend a little bit of time now, or you're going to be spending a lot of time just sending out general things. That's why I say it's so important to clarify who your prospects are. And I also say you can never know too much about your clients or your prospects, because
mm-hmm.
that's how you show them how they can specifically use your product and how being a woman-owned business fits so well into what their needs are.
Right. It's not so much about how great your products are, but what can they do for me?
Exactly.
Hmm.
And think about this. This is an illustration I give. If you have been working with a business or buying from a store or a person or a business, and you've been doing that for a long time, you feel very comfortable about it, and you need a new product or service, and you think they might offer it, which would you do? Would you call the company you know, or would you look in the phone book for a company you didn't know anything about?
Yeah, sure, you'd definitely pick up the phone and call someone that you knew.
Or you may ask a friend or someone else for a testimony or an endorsement or something. So those people, that's where the networking comes in. Once you do a good job and people know about it, then it will travel by word of mouth, especially through government agencies, because they don't really have time to research businesses.
Right.
That's why you have to go to them, and they welcome you coming to them. And people think that government's unapproachable, but they really are looking for people, and they really would like for them to come and let them know about them and give them some information.
Yeah, the more you talk, the more I see what you're saying about the people. Earlier in the call, on the show, you said that people just said that they can't find the women.
Mm-hmm.
And it does sound like an incredible amount of paperwork, but let's talk about this, because all business owners know that you have to pay a price before you can succeed. What happens once you get through that paperwork and you begin to sort of infiltrate those networking circles? Can you share some stories of small business owners that have, you know, can look behind them and say, you know, filling out that paperwork and doing all that networking was the best thing I did for my business?
Well, I have a client who is an architect, and she has her own firm, but she's the only architect, and then she has a computer-aided designer and a clerical person.
Mm-hmm.
She kept on trying to get an opportunity or take advantage of opportunities to do work with a local school district that was doing a whole lot of building. But being a one-person architect, she couldn't design a whole school. So what she did was keep, we kind of outlined a plan for her, and she kept going to some of the meetings so that she found out who the big contractors were bidding on the projects and the big architectural firms. And so often, because government has to take the low bidder, it wouldn't be a local architect or architectural firm that won the bid. It would be somebody from out of town.
Right.
So she got in touch with them, developed a relationship with them, said, I'm certified as a woman-owned business, all those things that made her attractive to them. And now she is the local representative on about three different projects for that out-of-town architectural firm. So she goes to a lot of the meetings, does some of the architectural drawings and some of the design work, but she's a subcontractor to them.
And how long did it take for her? How long did she have to go through that before she kind of got on the radar screen and got the contract?
Well, once she understood that subcontracting was the better option for her, it didn't take long at all, probably a couple of meetings or a couple of projects where she kind of got to know the different people bidding on it and then chose which one she would kind of make herself known to. It was what took so long was figuring out that was the better way to do it. So she was going to meetings and looking for opportunities, but not understanding how to subcontract or how to propose herself as a subcontractor.
I see. So there you're back again to the point of knowing exactly what I can do for you.
Mm-hmm.
So you can fit yourself in. And, of course, patience must be hugely important to this whole process. We're going to come back after our next break and talk more with Janet Christie, author of Capitalizing on Being Woman-Owned. She's sharing information with us about how to capitalize on being a woman-owned business by getting subcontracts and contracts with local, state, and federal government entities. This is Indie Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to Indie Business Radio. We're here with Janet Christie, author of Capitalizing on Being Woman-Owned. Janet, what are the types of benefits and certifications that are available out there that small business owners, woman-owned business owners, can take advantage of?
Well, most states offer a certification for being woman or minority-owned. You're in North Carolina, and in North Carolina it's called a HUB, a historically underutilized business. And on the state state's website, they have the specific information about that certification and how to attain it. And actually, in North Carolina, you register as a vendor with a designation as a hub. In South Carolina, it's a lengthier process, and you have to have a personal worth of $750,000 or less. Now, that's minus your real estate, you know, your home and things like that. Other states have similar qualifications. Some have that economic qualifier, and some don't. And then there's the federal certification for small disadvantaged businesses. That's, you also have to have the personal worth of $750,000 or less. And then they have a program called 8A, which is not only a certification but also a developmental program. And it, you have to have a personal worth of $250,000 or less. Then there are two national certifications by the for women-owned businesses by the Women Business Enterprise National Council and the National Women's Business Owners Corporation. Both of those, there is a charge for, and there is no qualifier. You could be worth $3 million and still qualify as a woman-owned business. So all of those will give you the certification, and which one of those you choose or that you attempt to get is really determined by who your prospects are and who your clients are and which ones they prefer. So we go back to that first step is to qualify your business. Who are your prospects, and what are your products, and what geographic area are you going to go after?
So maybe a first step for anybody that's listening to the show is to go to your state website and do a search on underutilized businesses or woman-owned businesses and see what comes up in terms of information about that.
Yes, and sometimes it will be listed under small business, sometimes under minority businesses, but usually women are considered a minority or an underutilized business in those specific cases.
You know, and I know that there's trade organizations for women like the National Association of Women Business Owners and other places that you can join and, I guess, meet other women who are certified in their states or whatever. But, Janet, you know, I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, and your book is wonderful in terms of providing the kind of step-by-step overview and instructions on how to do this. But, you know, it seems to me like there's just an absolute dearth of this kind of educational information out there for women to find out about it in the first place.
There is a lot of information, and actually that was one of the reasons I wrote the book, because there's so much information that women tend to get frustrated. Which one do I, you know, which website do I look at? And also when you go to government entities or organizations and you ask for help, they tend to then give you the documentation and you're supposed to read it and find the answer. And that's usually because they have way less staff than they need to answer all the specific questions that, we women business owners may have. So what I tell them all the time is, yes, you're providing the answer. The problem is that the business owners don't know the question. They can describe their scenario, but they don't really know how to word the question. So I do try to walk people through in the book some of the resources that are available and try to help them first determine what their question is and then go to the right resource to find the answer. But you're absolutely right. There is so much information out there and so much help. And maybe that's why people don't get started with it, because it takes a little time to find the answers. And you do have to develop a plan, because if you don't have a marketing roadmap, you're not going to get to the right place.
Well, I love the chapter 12 in your book called Marketing Strategy, Applying Research, Publicizing, and Building Selling Relationships, because it seems to me that regardless of whether you're really interested in contracting or not or subcontracting, this chapter is sort of like a mini overview of how to market yourself.
It absolutely is. And it was I included that and then tried to bring in the certification or apply the woman-owned certification to that, to try to give women the opportunity to use that certification they've gotten and take advantage of that door opener, tiebreaker, classification of being woman-owned. Because you know, marketing is about angles, and women-owned businesses have a built-in angle, but an angle's only effective if you use it.
Right. You know, it occurs to me as you're talking that this could be such a labor-intensive process, even though not financially expensive, labor-intensive, that in some respects, it almost needs to be your business plan in order to have the ability to actually work it.
Yes, and a lot, usually when I'm doing a workshop, about a third of the attendees will be people who are just starting a business or are still thinking about or planning a business. And I think that's good for them to either have the book or come to the workshops or both, because that allows them to put this marketing plan, true marketing roadmap, into their business plan. It's going to make it easier for them to be successful earlier because they know where they're going and how they're going to get there. It also will help them when they go to seek funding with a bank or some other type of lending organization, or if they're looking for investors or just feeling comfortable about knowing what they're doing, because so much of your business is the marketing part of it.
Yeah.
I don't do the financial part of it, but the marketing part, to me, is just as necessary as the financial part.
Well, particularly if you don't have any finances. I mean,
that's all there is.
Owners, well, and certainly most of my listeners are, you know, like me, we're bootstrapping here. We're not doing fancy business plans for banking institutions to lend us thousands of dollars.
But you know, when I talk to, because I do entrepreneurial development projects, like I do feasibility studies for incubators and things like that for government and economic development groups and nonprofit organizations, and in doing the research for those, I talk with bankers and large businesses all the time. And the thing that bankers tell me the most is people really don't know who their customers are. And when they ask who, you know, someone that's asking for a small or a large loan, they'll say, well, who are your customers? And the answer is something like anybody or everybody, and that's not the right answer.
It's funny. I got a phone call from someone a couple of weeks ago who wanted some consulting assistance just on a short term, like, you know, a couple of hours, and someone in the cosmetics industry, and she told me they were ready to do their first trade show, and they wanted to know which ones I would recommend that they take a look at, and, oh, by the way, they needed to define their demographic. And I thought, well, can't pick a trade show yet. Because, again, I mean, but, you know, it's not to laugh in that way, but it is so exciting and invigorating to start a new business when you have developed a product or service that you think is fantastic. A lot of times this kind of marketing thought doesn't go into it until after several hundreds of dollars, maybe even thousands, are spent going, okay, now we have to go back and figure out who exactly we're serving and what we can do for them and define that in terms that make sense to them.
That is so true, and it's that they don't, they know how to do what they do, but they don't know how to tell people about it, is kind of the phrase I use. So they know the beauty products or the aromatherapy or catering, or even if they do, you know, grading or whatever the business does, they know how to do that, but it's not always comfortable for them to then tell people about it, and they don't understand the marketing principles because that is separate from. So the lady you were talking about didn't understand that demographics was a first step, not choosing a trade show.
Right, and it's funny because a lot of times, you know, the promise of the Internet just rings so profoundly that, you know, if we put up our website, they will come.
Yes.
Kind of like what you said, if we become certified, they will come.
Yes.
There's so much more to it than that. So, Janet, what sorts of classes do you teach, and how can we find out where you are and learn more about enrolling?
Well, I do a couple of workshops. One is, should my business be certified? And in that, I talk about all the different certification opportunities and what the benefits are, and then try to give the class the opportunity to give a scenario of their business and then what I think might be beneficial, whether it's one certification or several. And then I also do a workshop called Capitalizing on Being Woman or Minority Owned, and I can do it just for women, just for minorities, or for both. And, of course, that's the one that the book is primarily based on.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are a couple of others I do about understanding how to sell to government, because I sold to them for so many years. And then also one on partnering, teaming, and subcontracting. So understanding how to do that and how to find those opportunities, and then some of the caveats about that kind of thing.
And where are these workshops held?
Well, I'm just finishing up a series at the Chamber of Commerce in Greenville, South Carolina, but I usually do them through chambers of commerce or community or technical colleges, and then have done them through some small business development centers also, not the government-sponsored ones, because they have their own workshops, but through a nonprofit that does small business development, incubation, and entrepreneurial development. So I can do them anywhere. I've done, of course, private consultation on an in-person basis and by phone.
Mm-hmm. And your website is janetchristy.com. Can we get your book there, Janet?
I'm not actually selling it there, but it does have links to Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Okay.
and some of the places that sell it.
Okay, great. Well, this has been a wonderful overview of some of the things that women-owned businesses can do to market themselves, and in particular, to take a look at some avenues that they may not have considered before. You know, I always like to say, you never know unless you try. Someone is going to take advantage of the opportunities. Why shouldn't it be you? Janet, thank you for joining us today on Indie Business Radio.
Thank you for having me.
I encourage you all to visit Janet's website at janetchristy.com and take a look at what she has to offer there, her speaking engagements, and also see if you're interested in this area, get your hands on a copy of Capitalizing on Being Woman-Owned. Well, I'm so excited that you joined me here today on Indie Business Radio. We've got some great shows coming up here over the next several weeks, lots of them. I'm putting together some great shows. April 30th, Catherine Seda, who is a search engine optimization expert, will be here. That's just next week, to talk with us about how we can influence spiders. That is the title of her new book. We're going to learn more from Catherine. She's been a guest before. She's always popular. And on Monday, May the 7th, Barbara Kay, the author of The Top Performer's Guide to Change. Barbara is going to talk with us about how you can use change as a way to catapult yourself and your business forward. Lots of other guests coming up here as well on Indie Business Radio. This is Donna Maria. I'm going to sign off for now. Until next week, I hope you get out there, enjoy your life, your business, your way. Have a great week.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.